When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Things Blues and Southern Rock Podcast, a Southern Storm of bold, liberating rock, shot through with blues, soul, and gospel. And now, your hosts for the show, Brian Jones and Jason Johannes.
Welcome to another episode of the All Things Blues and Southern Rock Podcast on Pantheon Podcasts, where you can go to find your favorite music genre podcast, and I hope we're on that list. Jason's here. What's up?
Hey, you know what? If this podcast isn't on the list, Brian, our new ventures podcast that we're doing should be. And you got a true crime podcast with Tracy and Suzanne, and I'm going to do one about heavy metal music and film.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. We thought it was just an April Fool's joke, but we were also serious at the same time. Maybe.
Well, at least one of those ideas. Yeah. One of those ideas is extremely serious and is going to happen. So, you know, I always love doing an April Fool's post every year of a new concept. The podcast is breaking up and we're doing this and that. And I love to be creative to come up with the ideas. And this year I did have some people individually message or text me and ask
Me
if that was really happening. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I know there's a couple of people that responded on the page like, you guys know what day this is, right?
I think a lot of people weren't sure and felt uncomfortable doing it in public and social media. Yeah, so I had a lot of messages directly to me.
Wow, that's funny.
Even our friend Suzanne Sledge, she's like, oh, really? I'm like, Suzanne, I tagged you in. you're part of it, but yep. Anyway, they love our podcast. They don't want to see anything happen to it.
And yeah, right. And that's wonderful to hear. I do really like this idea of, a true crime quarterly podcast possibly happening, but somehow linking in with, you know, rock and roll and maybe certain murders that have happened in rock and roll or alleged or conspiracy murders.
Absolutely. And, big news tonight. So we're recording the intro for this episode, April 2nd. Big tour's kicking off tonight in Nashville. Brian, who do we got?
Black Crowes in Nashville at the Grand Ole Opry. A lot of our friends are there. You know, David's there, David Hudson, Brother Rex is there. I'm not sure who all, but definitely friends.
Well, you know Rex will be there because Rex is at every show. He's our idol. He knows everybody and goes to every show. What did you say that Charlie Starr told you when you showed him a picture of Rex at that club show?
Yeah. I told him, yeah. Rex made it into the Crow show in Brooklyn. He's like, yeah, really, man? Cool. And showed him a picture of him and Nico. And he's like, yeah, Rex was just getting back from the UK. So apparently Charlie is keeping up on Rex's Instagram. If he has an Instagram, must be. So that's the only social media Charlie does.
Yeah. That's what he keeps up with. So it's a lot of fun. So they should be taking the stage right about now, Brian, because this is 9 o'clock Central Time when we're doing this. Right. And I'm on the State of America Patreon stuff because I know David Hudson again, he and Ian Rice do State of America. We're waiting to see what the songs and show lists are. So if he calls stuff out while you and I are talking, I'm just going to randomly say the name of song. So listeners,
Okay.
just be
Yeah,
prepared.
I'm really excited to see what the set list is going to be and how long they're playing, and excited to see how this band gels,
Yep,
you know. Because I
absolutely.
think this is
Yep.
the first kind of full tour with this lineup. So
Yeah, and right now I'm going to go up on the 19th to Chicago. See, I'm
okay.
going to stay with my wife's friends, her husband, and there is a big Black Rose fan, and then I'm going to catch up with like Jason Donches, who also produces State of
Okay.
Amorica and has
Right.
the R4 podcast, and Joe from Steepwater is going to be there, and
Okay.
run into some people. So
Right on.
I will come back to
Right
our
on.
podcast
Cool.
and do a report.
Well, they're playing in Minneapolis or near in the Twin Cities area, but they're playing, it's like a festival. So I kind of want to, I might go to that, but I really want to see them on their own show, you know,
Yeah,
instead of
me
like a
too.
45-minute festival set. But we'll
Well,
see. We'll see
that's
what
what's good about
happens.
the Chicago show, the Aragon Ballroom, is it's a crow show, so.
You have to tell me what that room is like, because I've heard about the Aragon Ballroom.
It's legendary. I think it's,
Yeah.
a little worn in, but it's legendary.
Yeah.
So I will 100%. I will take some photos for you.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I'm still trying to think of a segue into our guest, but you know, our guest from this band is kind of semi, you know, related to the sound of the Black Crowes, maybe, but heavier. Maybe Zeppelin blues, hard rock.
Heavy metal does it all. So our guest today is Sean Duncan, who plays drums. He's the touring drummer for LA Guns. He started out in a band called Odin, which can be seen in the Decline of Western Civilization Part Two: The Metal Years, that documentary by Penelope Spheeris. Played in a ton of stuff, but we know him best right now through LA Guns, because LA Guns, Brian, is out there. They're one of the better live bands that are outperforming right now, because you and I have both seen them recently live.
Yeah, and I want to see him again, man. That was a great show.
It's fun. They all sound so good and they're having fun, and you just can't help but smile.
And talking about lineups that gel, that have gelled in their case, you know, and this looks like, you know, hopefully will be the lineup of LA Guns that will be there until whenever they get done playing, which isn't going to be anytime soon, hopefully. It really seems like that lineup's having a good time, getting
Sean fits
along
in
well.
well. Yeah, I mean, listen, we know Adam Hamilton, who did the studio stuff, who's a crazy good drummer, and Sean doesn't miss a beat coming in and playing live and having a good time. He's got that heavy Bonham-esque kind of flow, and just he gets after it. And if you guys go to an LA Guns show, Ace Von Johnson and Sean are always out the merch talking to people. Sean will sign stuff from Odin or any other bands that he's in, and they'll sit and have a conversation with you. So they're not being paid to do that. They sit there and just enjoy doing it. So don't miss an opportunity to talk to those guys. They're really cool.
Yeah, and don't miss the opportunity that's right here to listen to our conversation with Sean Duncan, the drummer from LA Guns. We're here at the guest segment of the podcast. You guys know I always throw it over to Jason to introduce our guest that we have today.
Super excited for our guest. Great drummer, plays in a lot of great bands, has played in a lot of great bands. He's with LA Guns right now because, as you know, this podcast is collecting drummers from LA Guns because we love them. On today, Sean Duncan. How you doing, Sean?
I'm great. How are you, man?
We're good. We're good. And it just occurred to me, we forgot to tell you one thing, is like, if you see Jason or I raise our hands, we just do that so we don't talk over each other. Like if he's got a point or I got a point, so we don't go, oh,
You don't
at
have
the
to
same
call him.
time. So you just ignore that.
Copy that.
And for those of you listening on the podcast, just forget you heard some of the magic behind the show that we do.
So you're in how's everything in LA?
It's nice out here. I mean, it rained yesterday, but it's a little overcast, but I mean, it's LA. Yeah, it'll blow by.
Cool. Well, we always just wing it. We always like when we have a new guest, we just start out with like asking how you got into music and then how that lead into you deciding this is what you're doing for a career.
Oh, great. Yeah, let's go. I'm all for it. I started in music because my father was songwriter and a performer, and me and my brothers just started playing. I mean, I was beating on pots and pans when I was a little guy, so as a parent I was going to be a drummer. I think my brothers were happy when I picked it up too, because I started hitting them a little less, but that's the truth, man. And then Jeff, my brother Jeff, was me and him formed Odin, and he's in Armored Saint now. And so, that's kind of like I've always played music from being a little kid.
So th that was going to be my next question. When you were in Odin, this is, this is like in the early 80s, right? Like when that scene was just starting, the Sunset Strip scene was just starting. We just recently talked to Jack Russell and who else did we talk? I'm just forgetting who else we just talked to.
Jamie St. James in the past, and
Yeah.
Yeah.
It
Adam
was yeah.
Hamilton. Okay.
But now Odin was like got really close to getting signed, right? They're just on the brink of on being.
We got a deal with an independent label called Half Wet, which was a part of Green World, which put out the first Motley album and the first Poison EP. And we put out an EP called Don't Take No for an Answer that did fairly well. And then we got a deal with JVC Victor in Japan. And we put out an album after that. But the first EP is the one that kind of has the legs to this day, and seems to be the one people remember the most when they remember Odin.
I remember you guys being in the Decline of Western Civilizations part two and Bill Gazzari talking about how was your Randy, was that your singer's name?
Yeah.
Or yeah, how he's like, oh, he's the next David Lee Roth, and he's really hyping you guys up.
Yeah, he was a big supporter, but Bill was awesome. He was just an awesome person all around when it came to like supporting local music and bringing up bands. And if he really believed in you, he would, put your name on the wall outside, and which he did for us, and we played there a lot. We were really, really, really young. Odin was a very young band. When we had a little EP that we put out ourselves, and I think Jeff at the time was somewhere around 14 or 15, and I was about 16. Yeah, I'm not kidding. And then when we recorded when we recorded Don't Take No for an Answer, I was 19 and Jeff was 17. And actually, me and Randy were both 19, and Jeff and Aaron we're both 17, because we're the same age groups. So you in the 80s scene, I mean, I went, I saw Motley Crue at the Whiskey on a Wednesday night several times when they had a residency there, and I saw Mickey Ratt open for them, which turned into Ratt. I saw Dante Fox, speaking of Jack Russell, which turned into Great White. I saw the very beginning of all that. And we came in almost as like the second wave of it, because when we broke, it was because Chris Holmes was a very good friend and really liked the band, and he had us open up for Wasp at the Troubadour for the blood drive, and he gave us we got the direct support slot. We were drawing well at the time anyway, because back then you had to draw to get into the Troubadour. It didn't matter. All the clubs, actually, there was none of that pay to
Were they
play.
paid to play at all?
No, there was none of that at all. It was all by how could you draw, and the promoters talked to each other, and then you had booking agents that would like believe in bands, right? And they would book you and put you on bills because they believed that you were going to go somewhere, you were going to do something. So the pay to play thing didn't come in until later in the scene. It came in while we were there. Matter of fact, I think Woe Nelly started it at the country club, and our shows were some of the first pay to play shows that happened. So I'm not thrilled with pay to play. I think it's destroyed the music scene.
Didn't that come like a little later on, like 86, 87 ish?
Yeah.
That meant like they'd make the band sell the tickets to people.
Yeah, they still do it. Okay. That still happens.
They still do it. Yeah, still do it. Yeah.
Well, we've been offered shows, Brian, recently, last couple of years, where it's pay to play. They want you to sell 50 tickets or whatever, or buy 50 tickets and sell them. It's crazy.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, it's like it went viral. All the promoters found out you could get away with it. And then the thing that sucked, though, is out here, you know, we're in LA, so there's plenty of rich kids, right? And dad would give them the money to buy onto these shows. And it didn't matter if the band sucked or not. That's what you got opening up for you. Like in the beginning, we could pick our openers. We had, you know, we brought Bang Tango up from San Diego to open for us. Warrant opened for us because Jerry Dixon is Randy's cousin. And we had them open up for us a couple of times before they took off. What's a City Kid, which is Tesla, played with us. Mm-hmm. So we had a lot of that, you know, that's how it was then. It really had more to do with if you were any good, more than it had to do with, you know, if you had money.
Hello, Pantheon podcast listeners. Christian Swain here to tell you more about my experience with Raycon earbuds. Our family now has three pairs of Raycon earbuds around the house. And my wife just grabbed a pair of the Headphone Pros to replace some headphones from a company that was double the price. And yes, she loves them. Now, if you haven't pulled the trigger on a pair of Raycons, or even if you have, but you're in the market for another pair because they're just that good, well, now is the time to check them out, because they just launched their upgraded model of the best-selling everyday earbuds. With Raycon's upgraded everyday earbuds, now you also get active noise cancellation, ergonomic design, and multi-point connectivity that lets you pair with two devices at once. New quick charge function, three customizable sound styles, plus awareness mode. Available in a variety of vibrant new colors to complement any and all skin tones. I even have a pair of earbuds in a cool green color. I have tried just about every earbud known to humankind, and these Raycons are fantastic. Seriously, if you've been wanting to check out Raycons, there truly is no better time. You're going to ask yourself why you didn't check them out sooner, and Raycon offers a 30-day happiness guarantee. So, what are you waiting for? Go to buyraycon.com/pantheon today to get 20% off your Raycon order, plus free shipping. That's right, you'll get 20% off and free shipping at buyraycon.com/pantheon. buyraycon.com/pantheon.
So it destroyed the scene. It just absolutely destroyed it.
So this is so interesting because, like, my first love was, well, the first record I had was Kiss Alive 2, but, like, when Rat got big. But I know, like, that time, the Sunset Strip, it's one of those moments in musical history where if you weren't there, it's kind of hard to explain. But, I mean, it sounds like you were there before all these people started coming, bands, and then were you there through that whole thing?
Yeah.
Like you're talking about seeing Mickey Rat, you know, and that's, you know, I've always, like, I don't know how accurate Wikipedia things are, you know, for Rat and all that stuff. But I think that was, like, was Chris Hager the guitar player then with him? And was that before Jakey Lee, before Robin Crosby, or?
Well, I think, I don't remember it being before Robin Crosby. I almost positive that Robin was with Rat pretty much the whole time, I want to say. I don't remember. I did see Mark Torrain play guitar for them for one show.
Right.
I did, and I saw them a few times. I saw Mickey Rat and Rat both through, you know, up until they got huge. And then even then after that, they would come to our shows. We had a big show at the country club and they were there, and I think Chris brought Herman Rarebell because Wasp was out with the Scorps or something like that. And Ronnie James Dio was there, and you know, it was quite a party in the green room.
Was there, do you remember a point where there were too many people moving to LA? Was there ever a point where you went, wow, this is getting to be too many bands and too many cookie cutter bands? Or did you, was there ever a point where you went, wow, this is gonna get too crazy?
No, because, you know, as far as Odin was concerned, like we headlined wherever we played. So it didn't matter. We weren't like competing for a headliner spot by that point. And people wanted to play with us. And so it was crazy and it was insane, but it was really hard to explain. You know, it's like, how do you explain, you know, London in the 60s? It's just like,
right.
It's the same thing, or the 60s in Hollywood when the Doors were playing and whatnot. The streets were completely packed with people walking up and down the street. The Gazzaris, the Rainbow, the Roxy, and the Whiskey are all within two blocks of each other. I mean, it's like a two-block walk. Mm-hmm. And that little area was just swamped with people, with bands passing out flyers, with girls, with, and then, you know, in the clubs, I think I have a flyer somewhere that showed us playing at the Roxy, and Savage Grace was playing at Roxy the next night. And then down the street, it was, you know, it was Slayer, I think. It was just like, it was such a hodgepodge of bands for a minute there. That's why it was cool. And then all of a sudden, everything got kind of glam. And it didn't matter about the songs anymore. It didn't matter about the music anymore. It just mattered if you had a neat hair and you dressed pretty. And then that's kind of what happened to the scene in general. You know, they started signing bands by how they looked, not by songwriting ability and all that kind of stuff. And it got boring and dull and drab and, you know, it ran its course.
So, Sean, I told you over messages that I was going to watch The Decline of Western Civilization Part 2 in preparation to talk to you, and I did.
Yeah.
I'd seen it a handful of times, not in a long time, and then when we got to the part with Odin, I was very shocked your lead singer is attire with the whole assless chaps thing going on. I was not ready for that.
Yeah, Randy knew how to attract attention, and he knew how to say things to attract attention. And really, when you think about it, most singers worth their salt are similar in personality in that way, right? From Steven Tyler to you know, David Lee Roth. And it was just him, man. He was fearless.
You guys had a really nice section in there, kind of middle end, where they spent a lot of time with all of you. You know, you had your performance, the hot tub or the pool scene. And were you the guy in the background bringing everybody beer?
Yeah, I wasn't in the tub. My brother and Randy and Aaron were in the tub. I was hanging out with my girlfriend.
Okay. Well, there was somebody I couldn't really see their head, and they kept walking and giving people beer, I think.
That might have been me.
That was you? You didn't get a lot of like great airtime, even when the drums, like all you can see is really your hair, and there's a lot of quick shots of you in the background. You got screwed, man.
Yeah, I know. I should talk to Penelope about that.
Say come on, Penelope. but it was funny. I didn't remember that. And then when we were talking at the LA Guns show in Cincinnati, I don't know if it was you. I think Ace maybe said, "Hey, you're an Odin," and I was like, "No shit." So, yeah, I had to go back and watch it and see because I could not recall all that. It was kind of fun.
Yeah, it was a good time. I mean, that whole experience was fun. You know, they had a kind of a sort of a cattle call. They had like a small list of bands that they wanted that were, you know, the smaller bands other than the big people that they were interviewing that they wanted to focus on and kind of show the lifestyle of. Us, London, and Seduce, I think, won that.
Yep.
And even Faster, I don't think Faster Pussycat had really taken off yet. So we I remember going in and doing an interview with there was about three or four people at IRS Records It was Copeland and Penelope, and I don't know who else was there, but they picked the bands, and we got picked, and it was fun. It was what it was. I mean, that's how we lived. It was absolutely insane. Like I said, we were very young, so we were just like on fire. It's like giving a toddler a machine gun, you know. It's that's what life was like. It was insane.
That's a good.
So after that kind of scene dies down, like what was your next step then? Like what did you do musically?
I played in a band called Outlandos de Sol, which was kind of something. It was different than Odin. It was more of a like a Jay Giles meets Black Crowes kind of a thing. Yeah, it was a lot of fun. And Kirk Alley was a bass player in that. He played in Back Alley Sally. I don't know if you remember them. And then Scarlett Rowe was the singer who was in Saigon Kick, or not Saigon Kick, Saigon Saloon. And I did that for a couple years. And then me and Jeff formed another band because Armored Saint went on a break because John joined Anthrax. Mm-hmm. And we formed DC4 basically. It had several incarnations. The first was Bird of Prey. And then we did DC4. And it's like really everything I've done with my brother has just been one long, long story starting with Odin. And it just like, we just continuously do stuff together. Like I'm working on something with him right now that we're going to record for, I'm recording for him. This is a special project that he's working on and I'm going to do drums on that. So I did a lot of that. And then I played in Bullet Boys and did some tours. That's where I met Tracy. Was on that, was out when I was out with Bullet Boys. I also met Ace then. So it's just been like one long story.
Well, it sounds like you've kept from that early LA scene to now, like really active with some good projects.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you want to, at this point in time in my life, it's like, it's obvious that I'm doing it because I love it. I was born to play music and that's why I'm still doing it. And it's what keeps me sane and happy. Even during periods of my time when, after I had my son, I was working, I was still recording. I was still playing. And all through my life, I've always had that going for me. I've always done it. So, you know, it's something that's in you and the difference between the reasons why people do it, I think, is it boils down to how long you continue to do it.
Yeah. I'm going to be a little long-winded here, but I'm going to eventually get to a point. So bear with me. A couple years ago, I went to Picktown Palooza, the Columbus, you know, Columbus. It was Pastor Pussycat, LA Guns, Tom Kiefer, big Tom Kiefer, Cinderella fan, a new LA Guns, you know, what's that?
I played that show.
You did play that show. You did have to play that show for sure. And like the first thing I realized from all those bands is how much fun all three bands were having, how much fun everybody on stage was having. And then LA Guns actually blew me away. Right. I was like, holy shit. Phil Lewis sounds great. You know, Ace and Tracy. Great. I mean, all you guys sounded good. So I started catching back up with the LA Guns catalog, buying all the new records, seeing you guys on tour. I saw you at your first tour stop last summer when you hit JD Legends and like in Ohio, just saw you in Cincinnati. And like, I like watching you play. And this is getting back to your comment is you guys are just all having so much fun. Like you're not up there trudging away like it's a 9-to-5 job. Like you, every single person in that band looks like they're just having the best time.
Yeah, it's true though. I mean, and again, you got a bunch of lifers up there that really, if you, I wouldn't do it if it wasn't fun anymore. I wouldn't. If it was a headache, everybody in Guns is, it's a family. It's, I can't explain it. We all, the chemistry is really good.
You got on mute, Sean.
We're all you know, get along really well. And it's a beautiful thing. So it kind of transpires on stage. But also what's funny about that tour is we're also really close with Faster Pussycat, and we're really close with Kiefer's group. So yep. the whole like carnival is a good time, you know? So that all contributes.
Yeah.
It all contributes.
And Brian and I have a question. So I'm going to throw a comment out here real fast before you jump in, but just the amount of fun that you guys had made it so much fun for me and endearing. And that's when I started again, buying all the new stuff, checking you guys out, following you. Just so your onstage fun in the band really translates to the audience like us and makes us engaged and want to see you guys more. So thank you.
That's awesome.
We've also had.
We did our job.
Yeah, you are. Yeah.
Besides Ace, we've had Tony Higbee on. He's a great guy. Got to talk.
He's
with
an asshole. Tony. What are you talking about? That guy is a big piece of shit. Tony, I hope you're listening.
So when did you get asked to be in the band? Did you get a call from Tracy? And when was that? How'd that go down?
Well, it's really funny because, like I said, we did a tour with Gunzo. It was Bullet Boys and Gunzo and a band called Killer Bee, who I did an album and a tour with as well, which later turned into the Social Disorder thing, but that's another thing. And but that's where I met Tracy on that tour, and we hit it off. We became friends. He reminds me a lot of my brother Jeff, like the personality wise, and there's so many similarities. It's weird, even in guitar styles, but it's really wild. But we became really good friends, and every once in a while I would text him and say, just check in on him and say, hey, if you need a drummer, you know, I'm around, blah, blah, blah. And then one day out of the blue, he texted me and he just said, what are you doing this summer? And I was like, well, what do you need? And he goes, hold on, let me get back to you. And then like literally the next day I got a call from management asking me, you know, giving me the rundown, and it was a 9-week tour. And I was like, okay, I'll do it. I had to pull some strings. At the time I was working in the movie studios. I had to pull some strings and to keep my job, because I didn't know if I was just doing this tour or if this was more steady, you know? Mm-hmm. So I did the tour, and then I've been in the band ever since.
Like Jason said, you know, I saw you guys in Fargo here too. And you're having so much fun on stage. And I know even when Phil and Tracy got back together, they've had a few changes, but it really feels like this is the band. Like this, the lineup is solid and moving forward. And the great thing about LA Guns is they have those, if you want to say, legacy band hits, you know, from back then, but then it's a new band at the same time, you know, or not so much new now, but I mean, it's a great unique kind of dynamic.
No,
it's really a lot of fun to play, and that's the other part of it is I enjoy playing the music because it's good. And again, you know, this, I think that goes back to my roots of what I was talking about, where that, you know, music went to shit on the strip because the band stopped, you know, trying to write decent songs, and the talent pool was so watered down that it just destroyed everything. But when you got, you know, Tracy Guns coming up with licks every 5 minutes, mm-hmm. and the songwriting abilities that they have, it just makes it a lot of fun to play. And it's aggressive. I'm an aggressive drummer. And even, you know, they got categorized wrong. A lot of people call them glam, sleaze, rock, whatever, but they're a hard rock band. LA Guns is a hard rock band. It's a dirty, hard rock band. That's what it is. And that's my kind of music. So it's a lot of fun to play.
Yeah. I mean, they've got, you know, from Tracy, I know he's a big Jimmy Page Zeppelin fan, but you know, even blues, you know, they're blues inspired on a lot of the stuff. Kiss My Love Goodbye, you know. There's a new track on the new record. Well, I'm not going to pull it out, but it's very bluesy. I'm forgetting it at the moment. But anyways, just a great band. And, you know, going these legacy acts, yeah, like Brian said, they had all the hits, but legitimately, like these last three records, LA Guns has really, at least the last three records, have been legitimately good content. it pays homage to what you guys did, but it's also modern and it's not like a retread. Like it's, I was blown away. Like I said, after I saw you guys at Picktown Palooza and checked, I'm still blown away by the shit that's coming out of the band.
Well, that's good. I mean, I am too. I like it. I like all of it. And it's a lot of fun to play. For me, it's my wheelhouse and it's drummer music, you know?
Yeah. And you're killing it back there, man. Like we're watching you at the show in Cincy and you're just after it.
Thanks, man. Well, that's like I said, if you do it because you love it at this age.
Hey, how is it too? So we know, we've had Adam on a couple times and he's doing a lot of the studio stuff, but how is it for you? Like, what do you do? Are you trying to replicate like a lot of his stuff that he's doing that's on the record? Or are you doing a little bit more of your own piece along with it?
I kind of just roll with it, and we've changed some stuff because live stuff changes as you play it anyway.
Yeah.
And LA Guns is very much a live band. There's stuff that goes on sometimes that is different than we played it the night before. As far as like a fill here or, you know, little things like normal person wouldn't notice, but it's encouraged to be a live band. There's no tracks. I use in-ear monitors, but that's to hear. There's no click. There's nothing going on in there. And like I said, it's a raw, hard rock, dirty rock band. And that's just kind of how we go. So with the songs, even the old ones, we stay as true to the song as possible, but we're allowed to be us. I guess that's the easiest way to explain it.
You don't get Adam calling you and like, Sean, man, what the hell are you doing?
No, as a matter of fact, I've posted some things and all he's done is like applaud and yeah. Put fist bumps and you know,
he's
what I mean?
A good dude. He really is. He's, yeah. He's one of our favorites. He and Higby are two of our top guys just to shoot the shit with.
Good guys. Both of them.
Yeah, and then we'll ask Adam about like, well, what, you listen to any new bands or anything? He's like, man, music is my job. And I get home, like, assess music.
I want to watch Netflix. I don't want to listen to music.
Yeah, that's funny.
I think Jason, that song you're trying to remember is Shame. Is that what
Shame,
you're talking
you.
About? Yeah,
that's yeah, Shame. Funny.
Thank you. And the sad part is that's my favorite track off that new record too. And I'm sitting there having a mental break.
So does the set change at all? Does he ever like, does Tracy throw a curveball at all or?
Oh yeah. Yeah. It changes a lot. We have like the basic, you know, 75 minute set, hour and a half set. And you know, your 45 minute, opener, you know, set skeletons, but sometimes, you know, all of a sudden on stage, it'll change or we'll be having so much fun at a headlining show that we'll just keep playing and Tracy will call out songs or Phil will and we just go. So it's like I said, it's very live and sometimes it catches all of us off guard because we're like, oh, we haven't played that one in like 9 months, but let's go. So yeah, it keeps us on our toes. It's good fun.
What is your favorite song right now that you guys are playing?
Well, to play, I like playing You Betray a lot.
Yeah, that beats the shit out of those drums, man. Very Bonham-esque.
Yeah, it's just a great groove. It's a lot of fun to play. It feels good. Rip and Tear is always fun because, again, that's kind of a Bonham. It's really, that's a Bonham-esque rock and roll song.
Yeah.
You know, and then there's some that we don't play too often that like Killing Machine that are a lot of fun to play too. So I think we're going to be breaking Killing Machine out a couple times on this KK Downing run.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah. I think we're doing a couple heavier tunes on this one.
Right now my plan is to catch you guys in Columbus at the King of Clubs. Got a work. So I'm It's going to be game time decision, but I'm going to do my damn best to be able to get out there to see that.
Yeah, that's going to be fun. That's going to be a fun run. I met KK years ago, again, an Odin show. Halford came to a few of our shows, and there was him and KK. Wait, it was KK, Halford, Holland. KK, Halford, Holland, and Tipton. Oh. We're at one of our shows, and I have an Odin bumper sticker with their signatures on it.
Oh, nice.
I know, right? It's so rad. But yeah, it'll be a trip because I'm going to bring it up to him.
Talking about those curveballs, Ace had said something funny. He goes, like, when something comes up and have a player for a while, he just goes, sometimes I'll just play the root chord and go like this.
Yeah, unfortunately, I can't do that.
You can't, no. But nobody for you saying you're playing the wrong note, you know, like you don't have it. Like you can just do the groove if you got to.
Yeah, you just got to sit in it and just remember where the punches are. And
yeah, right.
Hope you're right. Hope everybody else goes in the right direction so you don't follow somebody. There's that too.
So when does the next leg start, the next leg of the tour? Or are you on it now?
You're coming. No, I'm not. Now. We leave next week.
Okay.
You got keeper dates, right? Some keeper dates?
Well, the first run is with KK.
Okay.
And we're gone. I think that goes where our first date is the 7th at in Fort Lauderdale. And then I think we have 12 or 14 shows with him. And then we leave from Philadelphia. We have 4 days to travel to I think it's Kansas, where we hop on with Kiefer, and we're doing Kansas, Oklahoma, Phoenix, Tucson,
LA, oh, Vegas.
Yeah.
Vegas?
And yeah, that's it. LA and Vegas.
Yeah.
And then we have a break, and I've heard tons of different things for the summer, but I just don't, it's not on my calendar yet. So I don't know what's going on yet.
It really seems too, like, LA Gun, like you guys are drawing really well and people are going to the shows and really appreciate it. Like, I think you guys are in a good spot.
I think so too. Matter of fact, we were talking and we noticed that this last run and the end of the year as well, we're noticing a bigger drop, more and more people coming. Yeah. And
you muted again.
We're pretty happy about it.
We got you.
Yeah.
Got you.
So is there ever a time when during sound checks where like there'll just be a jam that kind of comes up that you think maybe Tracy's writing a song just out of the blue unplanned?
Yeah, that happens a lot. Or sometimes he'll just start playing, you know, Red House or something. We just kind of follow and have fun. And it happens all the time.
Right on.
Happens all the time. Yeah.
I'm going to go back to something you said at the beginning of the interview, your dad being a songwriter and a performer. Like, can you tell me a little bit about him? And did you guys grow up in the LA scene or did you just come into it?
My father wrote a song in 1962 that's called Let's Go. And it's in all the sporting events you've ever been to. And it's a hand clap that goes, pop, 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 pop. Let's go.
Yeah. Oh, no shit, your dad.
Yeah. My dad, our father wrote that. It's so funny. And, but he also worked for Bones Howe Productions, which Bones was basically Bell Music, the label. And he did a lot of arrangements for like everybody from America to, oh man, it's a Fifth Dimension recorded one of his songs. And I remember going and seeing the Fifth Dimension. And when I was a little kid, we went down to the TV studio and watched them do their, they had a TV show for a while. And we went and watched that. So he was very active in music and he always had like a cover band. And they would rehearse in our garage sometimes, or we would go over to where they were rehearsing and watch. And we were really young. And so it kind of like, it's almost like, you know, back in the day, you know, people whose last names were Turner, it's because they were, they were turners. They did wood. They were woodworkers, and people with the last name Shoemaker were shoemakers, right? So I kind of grew up like that was obviously what I was supposed to do because that's what my dad did, and it looks like fun, and that's kind of that was it. I never really thought about doing other things. I've done other things in my life, but I've always done this.
Well, who are some of the drummers, though, that you wanted to emulate that really kind of inspired you?
There's so many. When we were really young, we listened to a lot of Chicago and Motown stuff, a lot of mm-hmm. the Spinners and the Four Tops and stuff. So I have this weird R&B thing in the way I play, and I know it's from that. And then as I got older, it turned into, you know, Steve Smith and Cozy Powell, John Bonham, Phil Rudd, Joey Kramer, and probably Roger Taylor. Those were probably the main ones when I was a kid. And Alex Van Halen. I can't forget Alex. That was Bill Ward. Bill Ward, you know. And then later it was Vinny Appice came into the fold. And ever since, and then, you know, to this day, you know, then it turned, you know, I was turned on by a lot of the stuff Grohl was doing, Matt Cameron, you know, it just keeps going. It never ends. But that my earliest formation was definitely, you know, an R&B background. And then I went into rock, you know, Tony Brock from the Babies and all that kind of stuff.
Oh, the Babies. Great. Yeah. John Waite. Yeah.
Yep. Great band.
So you mentioned Motown, R&B and stuff, like, and that's kind of close to what our regular genre is, but was there any blues that you ever listened to or got into, or any Southern kind of stuff at all?
Well, I loved like Lynyrd Skynyrd, and I loved various bands, you know, Humble Pie and, you know, that kind of 70s, very, well, you had the Southern and then you had the blues side of things. As far as regular blues, I don't think I really got into it until I Still Got the Blues came out by Gary Moore.
Gary Moore, and yeah.
And to this day, he's my favorite guitar player that's ever walked the planet.
Oh, badass.
Dude, I saw him play on that tour at the Gibson Amphitheater out here in Universal. And every single guitar solo he did got a standing ovation at that show. It was just absolutely electric. It was my hair is standing up on my arms right now talking about it because I still remember what happened there. And to this day, it's like anybody asks me who's your favorite guitarist, I always say Gary Moore.
That's yeah, awesome. I still watch clips of his live performances on YouTube and send them to friends and stuff just because, like, I think he gets buried a little bit from the mainstream listening crowd, but like I'm always amazed, and then I certainly share his shit to bring everybody else into the fold of Gary Moore.
Oh yeah, yeah, and people have to listen to more of him because it's just phenomenal, phenomenal guitarist. Yeah, there's so much emotion; it's just ridiculous.
Completely, and he I think he had the Greeny Les Paul too at one point, didn't he?
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. I think what's his name? Metallica has it now.
Yeah, Kurt Hammett. Kurt Hammett
does. My brother got to hold it once.
I like Armored Saint as well too. And my favorite part about Armored Saint is they were the band playing in the rock club in Hellraiser 3 when like the big whole slaughter goes on. So I'm like, Armored Saint, yes.
That's right. That's right. Is it?
And they're making great records still.
They are still making great records, yeah.
Yeah. We all grew up together, which is wild. I mean, Odin and Armored Saint was a little ahead of us, but we were really, really all really super good friends. And we used to party together all the time with Dave when Dave was alive. And I mean, and to this day, we're all good friends. It's crazy that there's some of the people in this business that I've known longer than anybody. So they're good guys. I love them.
And again, all that 80s hard rock, metal, and thrash just seems to have a second life now. I mean, it's really like people our age who grew up with it like it. There's, you know, I think new generation, some, you know, younger audiences listening to it and demand to hear it live.
Well, you know, I've that's the other thing. We, as I've been seeing younger kids at our shows, more so than before. It's like there's obviously a, you know, there's something going on. And again, I think it boils down to songs, and I think it boils down to, you know, people wanting to have fun and you know, go out and enjoy a show and not necessarily, you know, beat up each other or listen to tracks.
Do you think part of that is too, like, you know, obviously you've been in the record industry when it was huge, and now you're on this other side of it after streaming and all that, but does that have a little bit to do with where now, like, I felt there was a time where, you know, where things were just commodities, and then Nirvana came in and all you guys, like, sort of out of a job, or I don't know how to say it, but do you think now that there's no more of that, like, everybody, there's no lanes that people are stuck into, like, you can't listen to this band or go to this show if you like this kind of music, where now you guys are, your shows are coming back, and
I think it's exactly that. I think it's they're it's given them permission to like what they want to like now. If you think about music throughout the history of it, popular music, you know, the 50s got taken over by the 60s, and the 60s got taken over by the 70s, and 70s got taken over by the 80s, and the 80s got taken over by the 90s, etc. But in all of this, there was always like a fashion trend that went with each cycle, right? From punk to grunge, glam to hard, you know, hard rock, flower children, the 50s, all of it had, there was a new wave, disco, it all had a fashion sense to it. It doesn't seem to be so much, I mean, I guess you could say country's doing that right now, but I think that's kind of run its course too, to be honest with you. It's getting to be that everything's becoming vanilla. Yeah, it's become vanilla, you know?
Everybody's the same. Everybody sounds the same. It's all pop hooks and...
It's the same cadence in the vocal. Everything's the same. There's nothing new and original. And so, you know, that gets old. And that's what happens to every genre of music. There comes a point where, okay, this is a dead horse. But the ones who were really good or who started it are the ones that continued to have careers throughout the rest of their lives. And that's really kind of what you're left with, is you're left with the cream of the crop of that era and that genre, and that's what's left. And then, of course, people are going to like it when they see it, because they know some of the songs, and because they're the real deal.
It seems like as simple as, like you said, like, you're playing because you enjoy it. And I've heard famous musicians say, well, back when there was tons of money, like, well, we'd be doing this too if there wasn't money. And maybe some people were honest and true. But we really see that now, because there's not a big, huge pot of gold at the end of the rainbow anymore. It's like everybody's playing music and being in bands, everyone that we talk to, including you guys, because of the love of it. Purely, it's I think it's more pure. That's just my take on it.
I think so too. You know, I mean, you know, you got to make a living, but like I said, I said this years ago when digital music started coming out, and I said, you're not going to see any more Guns N' Roses. You're not going to see any more U2s. You're not going to see any more Rolling Stones. You're going to see a lot of bands that could go out there and make a quarter of $1 million a year, maybe a piece, and live very comfortably. But you're not going to have these $110 million bands in the frequency that you did before. It's not, it's not going to happen anymore. It's just not. But there's going to be more of this tier of professional musician that does quite well, just not, you know, ridiculously wealthy. And I believed that then, and I believe that now.
It seems like it's more, we see it generating more musicians, and, you know, kind of rock stars aren't really generated anymore. But I mean, you know, how many times, you know, there's not going to be another David Lee Roth or Steven Tyler. There's not going to be another Eddie Van Halen, you know, I mean, so.
Right.
And not that they weren't musicians, but I mean, we see more, you know, you don't see singers jumping all around and
You don't
jumping
see the
off,
personalities.
you know.
Yeah. It's, we'll see what I mean, everything evolves. So we'll see what comes over the next 10 years, to who knows what could change. Who 10 years ago we barely knew what YouTube was, and it's just things change so fast now that it could be it could just go the other way again. I mean, right now, if I was writing an album, I wouldn't write an album. I would write three songs, go in and record them and release them one at a time while I recorded the other ones, and then pepper the releases throughout 1 or 2 years because people only listen to singles. And if you think about that, singles was what started everything back in the 50s and 60s.
Yeah, that's a good
So
point.
we've actually gone back to that being more the formula. The LP came out. Started coming out in the late 60s and to be where it became popular, where it started selling millions as opposed to selling, a few thousand or whatever. They started selling millions of LPs in the mid to late 60s. So, it's, and now it seems like that's the way to do it. That's the new smart way to go about it. Less expensive. It's less expensive to record now than it was in the 80s, that's for sure. So, I don't know. It'll be interesting to see what happens in time and what the next big blow up is, because there will be another one.
Yeah. And Brian and I speak to a lot of emerging artists in the blues and southern rock or rock area genre, and some under the radar ones. And there is just talent and good music all over the place. It's just there's no platform for the masses to really find out about things anymore.
Well, that's radio's fault. I mean, back, that's the other thing that happened that this destroyed the
Like
business
Clear
of
Channel
music.
buying up everybody and playing the same shit.
It doesn't it back in, when DJs played your stuff because they liked it, and DJs were music fans first. That's why they were DJs. And there would be no Rush if it wasn't for DJs. There would be none of these bands would have exploded if it wasn't for actual living, breathing DJs that just believed in something, that heard something, went, "Wow, this is freaking rad," right? And started playing it, and then other people went, "Wow, this is rad." And now you got some computer generating songs and just regurgitating it over all the channels, and it's boring. I don't listen to radio anymore. I listen to
Oh, yeah.
Pandora because or I don't even listen to Spotify. I use Pandora because it'll introduce you to new music once it, and you'll come across new shit in there and you go, "Hey, I kind of like this."
It's interesting you mentioned back when DJs could actually pick what they play. And when he said that, it just kind of struck me as kind of like as podcasters, that's kind of what we're trying to do now. We're trying to be the promotion in any way we can.
We do it. That's what we do. We find people we like and we have them on.
Yeah, well, that's awesome, and that's what we need, and that's what most having any sort of a platform to to stand up and say, "Hey, I'm here," is awesome for a musician. It just really is,
Yeah, no, it's great. I mean, other than having Tony Higbee on, we generally like the people that we have on.
That Tony Higbee.
When you see him, make sure you said Jason from All Things Blues and Southern.
He'll have a comeback.
Well, we're here talking to you, and you're a hard rock metal dude, and Brian and I love that because we grew up on that. But we've got a blues and southern rock based podcast, but we talk to people we like and music we like too. We don't have to pigeonhole it in blues and southern rock if we don't want to.
Well, blues and hard rock is blues based. Bottom line, it just is, and even all as far as metal goes, all roads lead to Black Sabbath, which is blues based.
That's right.
So it's all, it's all a big marriage, I love blues, I love southern rock, I like anything if it's good, and that's the thing. If it's really good and people are, insanely, I love Government Mule, for instance. I love the
Oh
Black
yeah.
Crowes. Blackberry Smoke.
Nice.
There's a lot of them, and I can listen to it all day.
Yeah. You hit three of my favorite bands and Brian's as well. Government Mule, and by the way, Matt Apps is a badass drummer. Warren Haynes is a badass just in general. Blackberry Smoke, just saw him on Friday. Like, probably one of my favorite live bands right now, along with Government Mule and you guys. Like, there is a ton of really good shit, great live music for people to go out and see and hear.
And have a good time. That's
Yes.
the thing, right?
And
Go
have a
out
good
and
time,
do stuff.
you know? And that's what you guys are bringing with LA Guns is, again, I've already said it, so I don't want to beat a dead horse too much, but you're having fun on stage. It's fun for us as the audience. That transition from the metal scene to the grunge scene or alternative rock scene in the 90s, while I did like a lot of the stuff, Alice in Chains and Pearl Jam, whatever, that music wasn't fun music. It was dark and like sad. And I think part of the appeal for you guys and other bands is like people just want to go and have fun and have a smile on their face for an hour and a half, and
Just let
just be
go. Let
happy.
go and be happy. Be happy in a dark world. It's a
Yeah,
good
and it's
thing.
impossible not to come out of an LA Guns show with a smile on your face just because you guys have so much fun. The music's a lot of energy and positivity behind it. And it's go see LA Guns.
Yeah, come see us. It's a lot of fun. We do. We have fun, and we have fun all the time. I mean, it's fun in the bus. It's fun. We have a good time. It's a great band.
All right, Sean, how are we on time? You got a roll?
Yeah, I do because my dog is at the vet and I gotta go get
Okay.
her.
Well, we listen, man, it was great talking to you. And thanks for chatting in Cincinnati. Ace Pawn Sean off on me.
I
He's like,
did.
hey, do you know Sean? He's from Ohio. I said, I've been chatting with Sean online.
That's funny.
No, but these two guys, Brian, you've gone to the show. Ace and Sean stand out there and talk to everybody, sign things. They're really great dudes. You do wonderful for all the fans. And you guys don't have to be out there doing that, but you're out there every night.
Yeah, well, that's part of it, and it's fun to meet people, I mean, it just is. People are great, if you give them a chance, and it's nice when you get to meet them and make them smile, and they make you smile too, so it's all good. It's a give and take.
And you guys are giving a lot. So where do our listeners go to find out more about what's going on with you?
Well, I'm on Facebook, I'm on Instagram, obviously, and then LAGunsMusic.com has the, our tour itinerary and everything. And I guess that's pretty much the easy thing. There's a site called Artist eCard. If you go Artist eCard, Sean Duncan, that's my EPK is there. But I have links to that on my Facebook and on Instagram too. So you just look
Yeah,
me
you're
up.
Sean Duncan 007 on Instagram. What's your Twitter handle?
That is my Twitter. I don't even know. I don't know what my handle is on Twitter.
I just know Sean Duncan shows up and sometimes I send you messages. All
Might be S. Duncan Drums. I'm not sure. I'm not
right.
sure.
Well, I'll tell you what, Brian, we'll throw the stuff in the show notes for the audience so they can follow. Sean is a great social media follow. You're doing all the right stuff out there, so thank you.
Right on. Thank you, brother.
Thank you so much to Sean Duncan, drummer from LA Guns, for joining us. It was a pleasure. Anytime you want to come back, we'd love to have you.
Right on, guys. Thank you. It was a lot of fun. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much to Sean Duncan for joining us. We're building our way up to Tracy and Phil, hopefully. Johnny Martin's got to be next. We've had Ace, we've had Adam, we've had Sean.
We're collecting drummers from LA Guns, obviously. Like,
And guitar players. Now we need the bass player.
and we need the bass player, and we need Tracy. And Tracy did on Twitter, when I reached out to him about coming on to talk about blues music, he said he would. And I've been working through his proper channels and to not bother him anymore. And damn it, eventually, Brian, he's gonna get on. But we did get Sean. What he is a really good dude. I had a great conversation with him in Cincinnati. I've chatted with him online, just a really cool guy. And if you all of you have heard, an awesome history in like the LA music scene.
It's interesting to hear about more details about the beginning of that and through all of it. Like I said, we had Jamie St. James and Jack Russell, and to talk to Sean, it's like I said, when we talked to those people, it's like, well, you kind of had to be there, but we're getting a little more. Like I will always be fascinated with that time, always.
Me too. Well, because you know, that's when we were young, right? That's when we were very impressionable about culture and music, and it was a damn cool time. And generally, because even my kids are, you know, 18 and 21, they're interested in that stuff.
Yeah. And also, like I said, like I told Sean, it seems like the LA Guns lineup is solid now. It seems like this is it. It's moving forward, you know?
And like, you know, I kept repeating, they're so much fun, and they look like they're having fun on stage. And that just, the audience gets that fun. I stand literally for an hour and a half with a smile on my face when I watch those guys play.
Yeah, for sure. But yeah.
And Sean's a good dude, man. Like, you know, he's easy to talk to, hopped right in. Like, we've known him forever. Like, I love down to earth people like that.
Yeah. And he's got a good mix of music that he likes. And we like to hear that. And I think it's really, like, I noticed when we were just kind of towards the end there, when we were talking, like, the whole, our, you know, the premise of our podcast is always developing, and it's kind of like molding and changing. And it's like, that's what makes us different, that, you know, it doesn't have to be just a Southern rock or blues artist. You know, it could tie in from somebody liking that, you know. So,
well, he said the band, some of his favorite, some bands he likes are some of our favorites: Black Crowes, Blackberry Smoke, and awesome. Government Mule. I mean, come on, right?
That was awesome. Yeah. So, you know,
he said all the right stuff. He can come back.
He did. And until he comes back, always remember, Southern rock is reverent, blues is blood. We'll see you next time.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football.
FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.